the inside Maction. We take a lighthearted look at all things Macintosh in the world of Photoshop world, Flash Forward, NAB. I have a bunch of great events coming up here on the Inside Mac Show. It's brought to you by Micromap, Otherworld Computing, Macworld Magazine, the National Association of Photoshop Professionals, Mac Design Magazine, iPodder X, Dr. Mac Direct, and someone else that I'm sure we're missing. How are we doing, Desmond?
We're still in Las Vegas time, Scott. Scott ran us all around, all over the place. We have wall-to-wall coverage of Photoshop World. If you couldn't be there, you'll get everything except for the really good knowledge you would have gotten in some of the sessions, because we were going nonstop. How about you, Laura?
I'm doing pretty well. Heard you guys had a lot of fun in Vegas.
If by fun you mean staying up all night cutting audio and editing photographs, yeah, I guess so.
Editing, is that what they call drinking heavily these days?
You know what? I had the free booze on the way down, and I think I had one drink on the last night. The rest, I'm serious, this guy worked me like a dog.
Well, you guys were having fun slash working. I was cracking open my PowerBook case for the first time and discovering all kinds of new and frustrating things.
I'm not sure who had a scarier deal of it.
Gonna have to tell you about that a little bit later.
I got into a PowerBook one time, and oh man, I wish I hadn't. It was a few generations ago, but I mean, I'm used to working on PCs and have been doing so for a long time, but oh man, you are braver than I if you're gonna
go in
there.
Yes, they do make them very compact, don't they? All kinds of little parts.
Oh, and it's easy to lose them. I mean, and the worst is you hear a little spring go, and you go, oh, I know, I'm never gonna find that. We have a terrific show lined up for you. I know I'm going to be talking to Glenn Stevens. He's the president of Pixel Post Studios. These are guys who make tools for TV. If you wonder how some of those motion graphics that you use and all of the bumpers or all the really slick graphics you see in television programs come from, this is one of the places, actually one of the most popular tools they have for Photoshop users who are doing things for video.
Yeah, it's a great, it's like a plugin set. It's not really a plugin, but it's a menu item, even though it's a standalone application. It's cool. So Glenn will be talking about all kinds of cool television goodies later.
Yeah, and also in the video space, we'll be talking to Richard Harrington. This is the second hour, folks. He's the director of curriculum for the National Association of Broadcasters Conferences, and I met him over the weekend. He's another one of these video guys who is a total guru about the stuff. But we're also going to be talking to the folks from Flash Forward 2005.
And talk with Linda Wyman. She also runs Linda.com, but they put on this conference, like Desmond said, Flash Forward. So this will be in San Francisco here in a couple weeks. And it's all things Flash, from server stuff to, you know, just end user. It's all Flash. So
this is something I'm really looking forward to, because I am redesigning my website, as I've mentioned to you guys a lot. And mostly I have someone else helping me out, but learning the nuts and bolts and moving from HTML to Flash is something that's brand new for me. So I'm really interested to hear what their take is going to be on it.
You know, the important part of learning how the tools work yourself, not necessarily even if you don't really plan to build your own site, but it lets you know what's possible, and you can then give, you know, actual informed instructions or inspiration to the person who's doing it for you, because you know all the capabilities of it. You might get a person, and this is for the general public, I think I know who you have doing it, and he's a capable guy, but in general, when you go ask somebody to do something like a mechanic or a doctor or whatever, you're just, you know, they're deciding how hard they're going to work for you. And if you know their job, it's easier for you to get the most you can out of them. So if you understand more about Flash and you know what it's capable of, you know what to ask for when it comes time to have your vision of your website become a reality.
Yeah, look at Flash. I mean, like you said, all the cool websites are all Flash. I mean, the stuff that's really cool.
Yeah, definitely knowing what you want and benchmarking out there. And for me, what I found with Flash, it's really a fine line between having something cool and having something that's completely obnoxious.
Right.
So I think finding that balance where something's going to be elegant and useful and cool without being too much, that's definitely in the eye of the beholder, but it's definitely a real skill.
Someday when we have a show that goes on for about 8 or 10 hours, we'll go into all of the, you know, all of the little semantics of good website design, because on one hand, you want something that loads, bam, loads fast, and at least the first page gets there quick. And on the other hand, you'd like to have something that's a little bit more vivid. So where do you draw the line in between those two? And the Flash stuff gets better and better all the time. I think, you know, one of the things we learned from Photoshop World was a lot of people can be very good with images and they can do amazing magic. But the people who are really going to be the gurus and are going to go far are the people who can make those things happen quickly and keep churning them out. I mean, some of the discussions they had were just about workflow. How do you organize this work in such a way that it makes sense and you can keep doing it over and over and over again and do the work that you need to do? So that I'm like learning how to think about everything that way. You know, let's, you know, put it up in a line so we can do it over and over again.
Very true. And then we're also going to be joined by Lorene Romero. She's from the Apple User Group Advisory Board. We're going to be talking about what's up in the user group community, stuff with that. So that's going to be very cool. That'll be this hour.
Uh-huh. And, of course, we've got the news with Ken Ray, and that's going to be coming up right after the break. So it's a humongous show. There's plenty in it. Laura inside her PowerBook case. First, she's reading 2600. Now she's taking all the little screws out of her laptop.
Oh, so many little screws and so many little torque wrenches. I can't even tell you guys.
She's on her way to being quite the cyberpunk.
There you go.
I'll never dye my hair blue. Ever, Desmond.
Hey, you know, it's not for everybody. Just for the adventurous among us.
That's it. You're listening to Side Mac. We'll be right back.
Dr. Mac Direct is a brand new service that offers troubleshooting, training, and technical support to Mac users. Dr. Mac Direct's expert technicians resolve your Mac problems quickly, painlessly, and inexpensively. Dr. Mac Direct, on the web at www.drmacdirect.com or call toll-free 877-DR-MAC-4U. My name is Bob Dr. Mac Levitis, and I approved, wrote, and produced this message.
Coast and around the world, Scott Shepard is Inside Mac.
Welcome back to Saturday's version of Inside Mac.
Unless, of course, you're listening to the replay on Sunday.
That's true, and this could be Saturday's version on Sunday, but it could have been Sunday on Saturday, but maybe Saturday's on Sunday. Either way, this part of the Inside Mac show is brought to you by Dr. Mac Direct. If you need expert technical support, troubleshooting, or training, check out Dr. Mac Direct. Their expert technicians are standing by to assist you with your mouse, your Mac, via phone, email, or over the internet using their brand new incredible mouse call remote control technology. Check them out at www.drmacdirect.com or at 877-DR-MAC-4U. Great stuff. Next up here, we're going to be talking to our seasoned veteran newsman, producer, just an all-around cool guy, Ken Ray. Ken, what's up in Macintosh news this week?
Well, Scott, a few things, actually. First, three news sites cannot keep a secret. Apple is backing an HD horse. And finally, everybody wants a piece of the iPod. We start off by heading back to court. We told you last week about three Apple news sites that were being sued by the Mac maker. The company was demanding to know who had leaked secrets to the websites about an upcoming Apple product. Now, Santa Clara County Superior Court Judge James Kleinberg has ordered the sites to divulge their confidential sources. Friday's ruling concerned free speech advocates. They said that the people who wrote for Apple enthusiast sites should have the same legal protections as reporters for mainstream publications. But Judge Kleinberg disagreed. According to Kleinberg, no one has the right to publish information that could only have been provided by someone breaking the law. Those being forced to give up the information said their First Amendment rights were being violated because they don't have the legal and financial resources that bigger publications have to fight such information requests. What will the future of HD storage look like? Well, Apple thinks it might have a blue tint. Apple announced this week that it will become a member of the Blu-ray Disc Association's Board of Directors. The BDA is working on establishing format standards for high-definition video and high-capacity software applications. A single-layer Blu-ray disc will hold up to 25 gigabytes of data, and here's a shocker, a double-layer Blu-ray disc will hold about twice as much. Other members on the board of directors include Dell, Sony, Panasonic, 20th Century Fox, and Disney. Blu-ray is set to go head-to-head with rival HD DVD formats being developed jointly by Toshiba and NEC. Attacks on the iPod from all fronts this week. First, Sony has announced 9 new flash-based MP3 players. These are set to compete with the iPod Shuffle. They cost a bit more than the Shuffle, but they have added features too, such as 50 hours of battery life compared to the Shuffle's 12 hours. The Sony players also have screens to display song information and models with FM tuners for a $20 premium. A 512-meg model starts at about $130. The basic 1-gig model will start at $180. Is the Sony player not your speed? Well, how about a blatant iPod Shuffle ripoff? Mac Central reports Taiwan's Luxpro Corporation is showing off an iPod Shuffle clone called Super Shuffle. The unit displayed this week at CeBIT Trade Show in Germany looks exactly like the iPod Shuffle from the front, but has some major differences. It does, for example, include an FM tuner and built-in voice recording controls. The back replaces the iPod Shuffle's one slider with two, apparently to control the added functions. Luxpro says the unit will handle a variety of audio formats, including those that are protected with digital rights management technology. They come in 512 and 1 gig versions with USB 2 interface. No pricing information is available at this time. And while everybody is busy copying Apple, two companies say that Apple was copying them. NewRatings.com reports that the All Things I supplier is facing two separate legal cases over patent infringement. U.S.-based Advanced Audio Devices says that Apple's iPod infringes the music jukebox patent awarded to the former company in July of 2003. And Hong Kong-based PatRights says the digital rights management technology Fairplay infringes its patent. Fairplay allows songs bought on iTunes Music Store to be played on up to five computers. The CEO of PatRights, Philip Tsai, says that his company believes that the DMR technology being used by Apple is willful patent infringement. Microsoft is dropping MSN for OS X. The world's largest software maker announced yesterday that it will not support MSN for the operating system as of May 31st. Users of MSN services will still be able to access those services, but they'll have to do it by setting up a My MSN page and accessing it through their preferred browser. In a statement, Microsoft said that the Mac business unit remains committed to the Mac platform and its customers. Microsoft still makes other products for the Mac, such as Microsoft Office. The company reiterated it is not abandoning the Macintosh platform. And finally, you can say so much with a pen, or even how you hold one. Graphologist Sheila Kurtz has taken a look at the scribbling of Apple CEO Steve Jobs. Forbes asked Kurtz to analyze the signatures of Jobs as well as Microsoftie Bill Gates. Kurtz said that Jobs does not capitalize the first letters of his name, though she could not say exactly why. She did, however, say that his handwriting displays signs of serious impatience and a tendency towards sarcasm. There's a tiny bit more about that at Macworld, if you want to check that out online. Now, I have a question for you guys. Have you seen any pictures of the Flash players that Sony is putting out?
I'm looking for them right now, and I'm almost there, but what I did see was the Super Shuffle from Lux Pro.
Yeah.
It looks exactly the same. It is exactly
they
the same.
They copied that.
Which is why I'm not asking about that one, because you're right. It does look exactly the same. When you get to the pictures of the Sony thing, and they really are, I mean, they look like little, like, fashionable lipsticks or something like that, or like a giant capsule. They are so cool looking, and they add more stuff. And I'm thinking, I'm not rooting for anybody in particular, but it seems like there's finally an MP3 player that could compete just stylistically.
You know, Ken, I've seen your lipsticks, and I think yours are a little bit bigger, but I have seen it. I have a picture of it right here in front of me on Gizmodo, actually. It looks to me a little bit like a USB thumb drive.
Yeah, okay.
With, like, a screwdriver on the end of it.
Is it not cooler, though? I mean, is it not cooler looking to you than the Shuffle?
I like it because it comes in another color other than white.
Yep.
And that's really cool to me. I mean, the other thing is like, you know, for people who have iBooks, that's great that everything is white, but what about people like us who have PowerBooks? So the white and the silver don't match. So
right. I'm not rooting for anybody in particular. It's just, it's neat to, because I was talking with Scott earlier about this. I mean, the iPod definitely has, I mean, like the standard iPod. I think the iPod Mini was actually the first one that became sort of like fashion accessory as opposed to just a really, you know, great machine.
Well, you know, because it was accessible and it could be in the hands of more people. The deal is, a lot of people, they just want a simple, easy-to-use player. That's why the iPod is a superior device. It's easier to use and it has a better interface.
Yeah, I think is going to happen, and this is what I do as well, is I'm going to keep all my music, my entire library, on my larger iPod, which is only 20 gigs right now, but who knows, I might upgrade in the future. So the idea for me is to take my entire library to my car or have it at home, and then if I want to go to the gym, I can just put portion of my music on there and take it with me on the go. So maybe the answer is two MP3 players.
Perhaps one for each part of your music collection.
I use them both. They're great. Like you said, they have different uses and, you know, it fills everybody's needs. You're listening to Inside Mac. Next up, Laura's going to be talking about the adventures of tearing apart her PowerBook.
It's back together now, so it must have worked.
Must have worked. We'll be right back.
If you think all batteries are the same, listen to this. When Bon Jovi goes on stage anywhere in the world, the battery that powers their wireless microphones is always a Duracell. So whether it's 50,000 fans or just you and your CD player, it just has to work. Duracell. Trusted everywhere. Thank you.
Informative.
In front of the industry.
Inside Mac is on. Call Scott now at 800-490-0058 or email us at radio@insidemac.com. Inside Mac.
Welcome back to Inside Mac. Do you want to learn about your Macintosh? Do you want to take a PowerBook apart and actually get it to work? Well, you're going to find out if that actually works or not. This part of the Inside Mac show is brought to you by Macworld Magazine, the Mac product experts. You want to read about Macintosh applications, Mac OS 10 tips, iPod reviews, all kinds of great stuff about your Mac. Check it out, www.macworld.com. Right now, let's go with Laura Bernstein. Laura has a very interesting story about her taking her PowerBook apart. Why did you even attempt this to start with?
That's right, Scott. Well, I've been having a couple of issues with my PowerBook. The main one is that the hinge has been a little bit loose. As you guys can see, I can explain. The LCD screen bounces a lot with a little bit of vibration. So that is something that I was told can be fixed by opening it up and tightening a couple screws that are in there.
Or not using it in your car when you're doing about 110 down I-5.
Or that, too. But I was holding it on my lap, and I wasn't driving, so that's true. Des is giving me a bad time because I was driving down to L.A. and using my phone as a modem, and I was online in the passenger seat going,
"Where are you
can't
now?
Talk now. I'm on the grapevine." But so this problem has been getting progressively worse for a little while, and I found a site online, and it is called PowerBookFixIt.com, PBFixIt.com. And they sell some stuff, but they also have a guide online to installing an LCD display that they sold. So I thought, okay, well, I don't need to install my own LCD, but what I'll do is I'll take it apart and see if I can tighten it up. So the bottom line is, I had never tried to open my G4 before, but I had had a PowerBook G3, and I don't know if you guys remember this, but I have the G3 FireWire. It was so easy to access. There was a little, there were two little release slots on the top of the keyboard. The entire keyboard would lift up, and you were able to access everything, your airport card, your hard drive, your DVD drive. You could get in there. You can see the motherboard or the logic board, as Apple calls it, and do pretty much anything you wanted. And to me, that was very cool. Unfortunately, I guess as Apple has gained market share and become very design conscious, they really don't want anybody getting in there. So long story short, I had to unscrew probably maybe about, let's see, 6 different sets. I had to unscrew the memory card slot. I had to take out the battery and unscrew some screws there. I had to unscrew 3 screws on one side, 3 screws on the other side that have to be unscrewed and rescrewed in a specific order, and 4 screws on the back and 2 screws on the inside of the display. I had about 3 different sizes of screws I had to deal with. I had to go buy 3 different sizes of torque wrenches and keep all those little screws straight. There were probably about 20 screws at the end of it. Then I opened it up, and lo and behold, I couldn't get to the hinge because it was inside the housing.
Like a sealed compartment.
Exactly.
That's what I was going to ask. Did you run into anything, and this is the scariest part about going into a piece of small electronics, you run into a spot where it's either molded together, where they just don't ever intend for you to go in there, or it's glued together. Sometimes you find glue or epoxy and things like that you just can't get past.
There is a hinge, a replacement hinge that I could buy, but according to PBFixIt.com, they have a rating, easy, somewhat easy, difficult, whatever.
And oh my God.
Very difficult. It's pretty much the don't attempt this at home unless you're a super, super master. Then the hinge itself costs about $600 to replace the entire LCD. I think usually ranges about $1,000. You can get them refurbished a little bit cheaper.
Man.
But it is expensive. So
yeah, that's brutal.
The good news is there are 2 sets of screws on either side of the back of the PowerBook that hold the hinge in place. Now, when I screwed those together, I noticed that the entire LCD itself was a little bit more stable. But as far as that vibration goes, that bounciness, it's not going to be fixed. And I went to the Apple site because a lot of the times their support website has instructions. Nothing.
They
so the bottom line is they don't want you opening it at all.
Don't go in there because you're dangerous and you'll probably break something.
But we want to hear what people think. So give us an email, radio@insidemac.com. Should we be able to get inside our PowerBooks? Should you just want to leave them alone and pay someone else to do it?
It's scary. You don't want to go in there. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with folks from the Apple User Group Advisory Board.
Your PowerMac G4s never let you down. It still gets the job done, but it doesn't seem very fast anymore. Well, make it new again with extreme G4 speed from top-rated OWC Mercury Extreme G4 upgrade. Turn 9 in a day with blazing G4 2MB Level 3 cache. Extended speeds up to 1.467 GHz. 100% compatible with all your software and Apple's OS versions, including macOS 10.3 Panther. It's just plug and play to make that Mac new again. Check it out at www.macsales.com.
Momentum for your Macintosh. Scott Shepherd is Inside Mac.
You wish to leave a record of your call.
Apple user groups. Do you wonder what those are? What's a user group? Well, we're going to find out here in one moment. This part of the Inside Mac show is brought to you by Micromat, makers of TechTool Pro 4, the preferred disk and system utility for Mac OS X. Check them out at micromat.com. So, we are going to be talking about Apple user groups. If people remember what user groups were back in the day when things were a little more involved.
Back when computers were a bit more of a hobby.
Right, they had these huge user groups.
Yeah, absolutely, and it was a place that you could go where you could find like-minded people who would help you solve some of the troubles. A good example of a modern user group is actually something my grandmother turned me on to. There was a group, and I don't know if they still get together, it was up in Marin County here in the Bay Area, and it was called the Compute Over 50 Group. It was a group of senior citizens who got together to help each other out with their computer problems. Here's a group of peers, people who can speak in each other's languages, who all have varying degrees of expertise helping each other out, and I think that's the essence of a user group.
Right, so let's talk here. We're here with Lorraine Romero. She is one of the people on the Apple User Group Advisory Board. She doesn't actually work for Apple, but she advises Apple on things with user groups. She's also the president of the North Coast Macintosh User Group. How are we doing today?
Well, good afternoon, Scott. How are you?
Great. So tell us, give us a little background. What's a user group? I mean, you know, like Desmond said, it was a place that you used to go when you used to put your own computer together, or you needed some really technical information. Tell us how user groups are different with the Apple stuff, and have they changed at all?
You know, Desmond, you had a really good definition of it. It's really a place for people to feel like they're at home. I mean, we live in a PC world, which is a reality. That's just the way it's going to be. And as you said, it's a group of people who are like-minded. I know, for example, our group, the North Coast Mac Users Group, is just north of where you were referring in Santa Rosa, California. We have about a little over 500 members. We have a monthly meeting, and at those meetings, which is typical for a user group, is we have speakers. Like, we're fortunate enough to have people like Jim Hyde in our area, Derek Story, Burt Monroy. They come to our meetings and do a presentation. It's a place for people to ask tech questions. I know one of the benefits of being a user group member for NC Mug is we have a member list, so people will put a question out. About 200 people are on the list and can get support that way. Overall, nationally, there's over 900 user groups, and two-thirds of them are in the U.S., and the others are internationally. I know Japan has about 40, which is great. And the Apple User Group Advisory Board, as Scott was saying, is there's seven of us, and we do different things, do different types of projects to be able to help Apple support the user groups.
One of the nice things about user groups is it gives a group of people access to professionals, experts, gurus, guys like Burt Monroy, other folks that you would never get FaceTime with any other way.
Exactly. And, in fact, my role on the User Group Advisory Board is vendor relations, and I work with five vendors every month to give exclusive user group discounts, and that's a perk for being a member. And those get distributed to the group's ambassadors, and each group has one person that's designated to do the go-between, between what information we provide to them, and then they pass it on to their members. So it's pretty organized.
Lorraine, where can we find out more information about user groups? People want to get involved, they can find one in their area. Where's all this information stored at? Is there a central place, at Apple's website, or a third party? Where can people learn if they want to just join a group and get involved?
Sure. The place I would recommend to start is, again, you go to the Apple website. So it's apple.com/usergroups, and then right in the middle will be Find a Group. And right there, you click on it. You can type in Kansas. You can type in Florida. Any other state has international groups, that sort of thing.
Very good stuff, and you're going to be joining us here every so often, giving us reports on things happening in the user group community, news, and all this kind of great stuff. So we really appreciate you being with us today, Lorraine.
Great. If we're looking for stories, and I'd like to put a call out to your listeners to email me if their group is doing something fabulous and wonderful that they may like me to report on. Do you mind if I give my email address?
I'll tell you what. You know what? We're out of time. We'll give ours and forward them to you. We're radio@insidemac.com. Send us stuff for Lorraine. We'll get it right to her. Lorraine Romero, thanks for joining us. Stay right there. We got more show coming up.
Sudden ups and downs, breathtaking twists and turns. No, it's not a roller coaster, it's the stock market. But it doesn't have to be a rough ride. Just subscribe to Barron's, America's premier financial weekly. Subscribe now and get 13 weeks of Barron's for only $39. Each fact-filled issue brings you investing insights, market information, and special reports you won't find anywhere else. Special reports that include the best-performing companies, mutual fund managers, and the outlook for stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. That's not all. Subscribe today and you'll also get Barron's Guide to Building Wealth, plus 4 weeks of Barron's Online free with your paid subscription. All the tools you need to make smarter investment decisions. That's 13 weeks of Barron's plus the Guide to Building Wealth and 4 weeks of Barron's Online, all for only $39. This offer is available to new subscribers in the continental U.S.
Call now, 800-228-5505. That's 800-228-5505, and enjoy the ride with Barron's. News before the market knows.
Macintosh for the new millennium.
This is Inside Mac.
Inside Mac. Inside Mac.
Get on live now at 800-490-0058 or email us
at radio@insidemac.com.
Welcome back to the Inside Mac Show. We're going to take a look here in a moment about all things Macromedia Flash. There's a great conference coming up here in San Francisco, but this part of the Inside Mac Show is brought to you by Otherworld Computing, the place to get Macintosh upgrade goods. You want to put a new battery in an iPod, you need RAM for your PowerBook, you want a video card, a hookup so you can run Motion, check them out at MacSales.com. How are we doing, Laura?
Doing pretty well. Thanks, Scott.
Good. So we're going to be talking with Linda Winan right now. She is the person that puts on Flash Forward. How are we doing, Linda?
I'm doing great.
Good.
How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much. Give us a little background. What is Flash Forward? I mean, of course, it's about Macromedia Flash, but give us a little rundown on the whole conference and what you guys do with Flash Forward.
Well, Flash Forward is a user conference that we've been putting on for 5 years. We're about to have our 13th version of the conference happening in San Francisco from April 6th through April 8th, so it's coming around the corner here. And what it is it's the largest gathering of Macromedia Flash developers and designers in the world. And it's all kinds of sessions that have to do mostly targeted to intermediate to advanced audience. We do have some beginning sessions, but we find that the majority of our attendees are working professionals in the field, and it's a professional level conference.
So, Linda, that's what I was going to ask you, because as I explained to Scott and Desmond earlier in the show, I am currently working on my website right now, but I am definitely a beginner. I am just learning about Flash. So you would recommend that somebody like me who doesn't really know very much maybe not come to this conference?
Well, I actually don't think you'd get as much out of it as somebody who's already been enmeshed in the in the world of creating Flash sites. However, my other hat is that I'm co-founder of Lynda.com, which is LYNDA.com, and we publish both beginning books and beginning video tutorials on Flash. We actually have the largest selection of Flash training that I know of, and you might want to visit our website and check out our online learning library, where we have over 7,000 training movies online, and you could easily teach yourself Flash there and get up to speed to the point where you would get the most out of the conference.
So your recommendation to beginners is go and get some materials yourself and kind of teach yourself about it first, and then maybe once you're pretty comfortable to come to the conference.
Definitely, because I think it's sort of a waste of your time if you're coming there without really having a basic understanding of Flash. What you're going to see at our conference are the leaders in the field, people who are really going to inspire you and show you what's possible to do. And they're going to be speaking a language with a lot of terminology and, you know, just references that you wouldn't understand at all if you hadn't gotten your feet wet a little bit with some, you know, preliminary training. And then the other kinds of sessions are more technical where, you know, it's either a deconstruction of how to do a very specific kind of task or how to program something very specific or how a specific kind of problem was solved. So I think if you, you know, kind of think about any field, if you were an absolute novice and didn't know what anybody was talking about, it would be kind of way over your head. But if you had at least the basic understanding, you'd get a lot more out of it.
Linda, tell us about the breakdown of the program. You have workshops, there's seminars, and then you have an expo. Give us a little breakdown. What's the difference in your workshops and your seminar stuff?
Well, we have actually multiple kinds of seminars. We have workshops, which are longer form workshops where they really go more into depth than a regular seminar session. The first day is all workshops, so it's these two-hour, more intensive kinds of sessions. And then the next 2 days have workshops, which happen every hour on the hour, and we have two main rooms where we have two different workshop choices, and typically we like to alter them so that one might be more creatively focused and another one might be more developer focused. Flash is a really interesting subject matter because people sort of walk this gray line between being a programmer and being a designer. So we have some sessions that are more oriented towards the creativity, the ideas, the end result, and others that are really nitty-gritty into the code and how you do things. And so we always sort of try to pair them up so that you have the choice of one or the other. And then we have Ask the Expert sessions, which are more interactive, where we have two of those per hour. So you can go to those, and they're more like a special interest group where you might have it would be a theme, and then there would be an expert in there who might give a very brief description or overview, and then you'd be able to interact with other people in the room and with that trainer. And then we have a Q&A session going on at the same time. We always give people the opportunity for all of our main sessions to then spend an hour with the speaker if they want to. And we have something called a tech showcase. We actually have, you know, five or six concurrent things going on at all times, and the tech showcase is where our exhibitors can show off and showcase their products. We really like to keep editorial and sponsorship separate, just because we don't want our editorial content to feel like it's a sales pitch to anybody. So we came up with this idea of doing tech showcases, which allow our wonderful exhibitors who actually have great products to be able to, you know, showcase their products in a setting where people aren't expecting it to be non-biased. They're really kind of expecting to go there and learn about the product.
So, Linda, you do this conference every year. Is there anything that you're seeing this year that's particularly new and fresh that you like?
Well, we actually do it twice a year. And I think what astounds me every single time we do this conference is just how much more advanced the work gets. Flash is such an amazing platform because, for one thing, it works on Macs and Windows. It offers, you know, full animation, full interactivity, sound, visuals. It's just such a rich platform that it sort of would allow you to create anything you can think of. And I think what's happened with maturity is that the kinds of applications and programming that people are creating in Flash just continues to get more and more amazing. And so right now we're at a fairly, you know, mature level in the software. Our conference is 5 years old, and the software is about 7 years old. So I think what we're really focused on this year is sort of best practices and really looking at the experts and trying to stand on their shoulders and not have to learn the wheel and invent the wheel over and over again. We have a lot of best practices kinds of sessions this time around.
Yeah, it's funny that you should say best practices, because earlier in the show we were talking about how sometimes when people learn Flash, they get a little bit carried away on a website, and you'll find that they are going for the biggest and the loudest and the brightest, and that's not necessarily always the best use of the technology. I think it's sometimes a combination between classiness and subtlety and effects. Is there any class that sort of addresses sort of how somebody could incorporate Flash and yet still keep it tasteful, or what's your general advice on that?
Well, yes, we do. We actually have a lot of design sessions that are about just that. You know, animation aesthetics and visual aesthetics and typographic aesthetics. And Definitely, I think Flash can be dangerous in the hands of somebody who doesn't understand that principle that, you know, you're using it as a visual communication tool, and you can overwhelm people with just too much Flash, you know, to use the same word, but, you know, you can sort of put in too many bells and whistles and really lose the point of the communication. And so, honestly, the kinds of presentations that people do at this conference are so inspiring. And we also have a film festival that I didn't talk about at all, which is an online competition where people submit their favorite sites, and we do this competition once a year, and it's just shown, all the winners are shown and finalists are shown in this amazing theater with amazing sound, and it sort of just sets the bar of where everything is today, what the very best work in this field is today, and it's really inspiring.
Linda, you have an exposition. You have a hall.
Yes, we do.
A show floor. Tell us about who's going to be there and what we can find actually on the show floor.
Okay, well, we have quite a few different sponsors. Macromedia, of course, is our main sponsor. And then on our website, we list all the other sponsors. So we have different kinds of, like, networking and streaming people. We have 3D applications. We have different developers who are doing... like Macromedia Press, who creates all kinds of, you know, books and training materials about Macromedia products. Electric Rain, they have 3D software. Different publishers. We actually have, you know, Peach Pit Press, New Writers Publishing. We've really gotten great support from the different publishers out there supporting our conference because, you know, they find a lot of their audience is here at our conference. And then lynda.com will have a booth, and we always have show specials and love to meet our Flash Forward customers. So it's not a huge trade show floor, but it's really targeted exhibitors who are, you know, truly who these professionals need to know about.
Linda, where's the event going to be, and where can we sign up and get more information about it?
Well, our website is flashforwardconference.com, and the next event in April 6th through the 8th, is at the Herbst Theater in San Francisco. It's a beautiful historical building, and we've had it there for, I think, the last 3 years, and it's right across the street from City Hall in that part of San Francisco. I guess that's considered downtown to some degree.
Good stuff. And what's the domain? How do we get to the website?
www.flashforwardconference.com. And we also have a blog that's really fun to read. If you can't attend the conference, or even if you can, it's fun to look through all the different listings on the blog.
Very nice. Thanks, Linda. That was Linda Winan. You can check it out at www.flashforwardconference.com. We'll be right back.
Hey, have you seen the latest issue of Macworld?
Not yet, but it might be in my mailbox today.
Wait till you see it. It's got the best reviews on those hot new products you've been raving about. I just love looking at all the new stuff. Sometimes, I wish Macworld came twice a month.
You know, you can always find the latest stuff on their websites. That's what I do when I can't wait. Just go to Macworld.com.
Oh, yeah. I gotta remember that. Macworld.com has all the latest reviews, plus archived product info from back issues. That way, I can get my Mac fixed when I need it.
Yeah, and don't forget, you can also compare the current prices on Macworld Product Finder and find out the latest Mac news at MacCentral.com. They've got enough to satisfy even the most avid Mac lover.
www.macworld.com. Find everything you need to know and more right now.
Your life,
business,
your home,
inside
your world.
This is Inside Mac with Scott Shepard.
Macintosh, iPods, you name it, it's here. This is Inside Mac, and this part of the Inside Mac show is brought to you by the National Association of Photoshop Professionals. If you want to attend the coolest event, we're going to be talking about this later, by the way, too. But this is the leading industry resource for digital imaging. Check them out, www.photoshopuser.com. So how are we doing, Laura and Desmond?
We're doing good. It's
doing
a good show
well.
So far.
You know, I wanted to mention something, adding on to the segment I did about the PowerBook a little while ago. You guys have to be really careful when you're talking about opening stuff up, because you might void the warranty. For me specifically, my warranty had already expired, so I kind of had nothing to lose. I knew that if something was broken, I was going to have to pay for it anyway. But I know specifically on the hard drive, when you open it up, there's a label that says, warning, do not touch, or the warranty will be voided. So that's another consideration for you guys, especially if you have the AppleCare plan and you've purchased extra protection. Of course, definitely, you know, that's why a lot of people buy that AppleCare, so they don't have to worry about it. They can just send it off to the experts. But if you're cheap like me and you figure, heck, I just spent $3,000 on this computer, what's another, you know, $250 to send it to some genius to look at?
Yeah,
I'm going to try it myself.
The only time I've seen the hinge replacement deal is I think I saw an ad in one of the magazines or a website, and they basically said, $600, just send the thing to us. We'll take care of it. But by the way, we have an upgraded one that won't have this problem. And it's not really an exclusively PowerBook problem. I mean, I've got an IBM ThinkPad that really, it's gone limp. I mean, the thing just will not stay up.
Sorry about that. I had a moment
there. He needs Viagra for his PowerBook.
Basically, you know. And so that machine, you know, I just put it out to pasture. It's done.
Hinges are problematic because you can tighten the casing around the hinge, but just because of the way they're set up, because that little, the hinge kind of rotates back and forth in a lubricated shaft. I mean, after time, that's just going to deteriorate, and there's really nothing you can do but break it open or replace it. And that's why it's problematic. It's really frustrating. You know, I actually had a friend of mine who had a PC, and it was a laptop, and his hinge was broken, and I think he was probably sitting in the car too. It was rocking back and forth. It smacked up against the dashboard, and then the LCD went out. So, I mean, it's not just about the hinge. You have to be extra careful because the LCD is probably the most expensive part in your laptop.
Laura and I started a discussion before we came on the air today about whether or not you really should be allowed to go into your PowerBook or your Mac device at all. And it really, it goes back to this ancient discussion that's been going on for years of, is that why the PC took off? Because people felt like they had more control over what was inside it? Did it all, I feel that the real defining moment was when Apple tried to do the clone thing with Power Computing and then scaled back. I think that was a big message to the industry.
Well, they had refused to allow cloning, to license cloning for a long time, and then by the time they said, okay, we will, nobody was interested anymore. The market had moved on. And I feel really sad that Apple is going for this, like, sealed box, don't touch it, it's magic, only we can fix it approach. Because as I mentioned, my G3 PowerBook was completely accessible. I realized that there were probably many people who ruined their computers because they didn't know what they were doing. But I think they are edging out the more advanced part of their market by saying, don't go in here, or here are 50 different screws that you have to use 4 different tools to get to. You know, if they really want to appeal to the beginners, maybe they should make 2 versions of the box. Maybe they should make a Pro Series.
Well, that might be what the Mac Mini does. There's a thing in Macworld that just came out of how to go inside your Mac Mini and what is in there. I actually just finished reading the article today. Only takes a putty knife to get in there.
That's it. They should actually make like a Mac Erector Kit, where you get like a logic board and a bunch of these different plastic pieces, and you can sort of make your own gig.
Well, that's been part of the appeal of the PC for years. I mean, you can go to Fry's, you can buy a motherboard, you can buy a case, you can get neon lights for it. I mean, just walk around CES like we did. And, you know, I think there really is a lot to say about customization. I know Apple wants to protect the integrity of its product, but I think there really has to be a balance between, you know, making sure that beginners don't screw things up, but still keeping people like us happy, who, if we want to learn about our computers and go inside, I think that's a great thing for everybody to know.
In the next 7 hours of our show, we'll continue on the same topic, because there is definitely 7 hours plus worth of information. But actually, I'm kidding. In the second hour, stay right where you are. We're going to be talking to the folks from Pixel Post Studios about doing Photoshop motion video for television. We'll also be talking a bit about Photoshop World, find out what you missed.
You're listening to the Inside Mac Show. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Good morning, my good fellow. Welcome to Smith's Computer and Robot Repair. How may I be of service?
Yes, my Mac has crashed. Big time. I was about to save the annual report when...
Whenever my systems are not operating correctly, Tech Tool will always find the problem.
Excuse me. Quiet, you platinum-plated nincompoop.
I'm sorry. You were saying?
Anyway, my Mac totally crashed, and if I don't get this data back, my boss is gonna freak.
If it were not for Tech Tool Pro, my memory banks would have been lost in...
Silence, you motorized monstrosity!
It is not necessary that I stay here and be insulted.
Wait, robot, don't go. Are you telling me this Tech Tool Pro software can save me a trip to the repair shop?
Affirmative. I kid you not.
Don't listen to him, sir. No software product can match the technical skill and computer savvy of Smith's Computer and Robot Repair.
Maloney, that does not compute.
So, robot, where can I get this Tech Tool Pro?
From Micromat in Windsor, California.
Excellent. Thanks for the info.
You are welcome.
Find out more about Tech Tool Pro by visiting Micromat.com.
I need a vacation.
You are Inside Mac.
Macromedia's Flash. Photoshop. NAB, if you want to hear about it, you're at the right place. This is Inside Mac, and this part of the Inside Mac show is brought to you by Mac Design Magazine. If you want to learn all the cool stuff about designing on your Macintosh, this is the place to go, MacDesignOnline.com. I'm here with Desmond Crisis and Laura Burstein. How are you guys doing today?
It's a great show. It's a bang-up show so far. The first hour was a blast, and in the next hour, it's going to be even better. We'll start out with, we're going to be talking with Glenn Stevens. He's the guy from Pixel Post Studios. And these are the folks who make the tools for television and its plugins for Photoshop. If you wonder where all those cool overlaid graphics for the news and things like that come from, this is the place. He's going to talk about the latest, and we're going to talk a lot about who's using it and for what.
It is good stuff. You know, we're going to have a little focus here on the next few weeks about NAB because this is coming up here in April, and this is the biggest show for broadcasters. They have a huge, the South Hall, upper and lowers, all computer stuff. It takes days to walk through. It makes Moscone look like a 7-Eleven. Seriously. And this is all hardcore video. This
you
is
know,
great. This
it
is
just cracks me up because it just seems like every time there's a tech convention, it's in Las Vegas. Is that because it's the only place that has enough hotel rooms
right.
to hold everybody?
That's exactly
it. I don't necessarily think that was the case at Photoshop World because that was only at Mandalay Bay, right?
Right.
How much of it do you think is out of necessity, and how much is it because geeks love to go to Vegas?
Well, Vegas is a great destination. I mean, that's just a given. And you know what's kind of interesting? It's sort of a cause and effect deal. Like, Comdex and CES sort of have to happen in Las Vegas because it's the only town big enough to accommodate them, especially CES. CES is the show that tests the capabilities of Las Vegas every year, and then everything else is easy as long as they got through CES. But this Mandalay Bay Convention Center is totally huge. Scott, you're telling me somebody paced it out, how far it took to get from the hotel room to the actual convention center.
Oh, it's like a mile.
Yeah, somebody like had a little pedometer, and they walked it, and it was about a mile walk to the convention center in the hotel.
1.8 million square feet.
And the worst part about it is that every room and hallway looks exactly the same. You look anywhere, this one room.
It reminds me of walking through The Shining and hallways and everything.
The long Kubrick-esque hallways.
Absolutely. But, you know, you ever seen, like, the screensaver that's like the mouse walking through the maze? I think it's a Windows thing.
No.
It was like that. Except it just never ended. Occasionally you'd see somebody you knew, and then you'd pass the same thing over and over again.
It was. It's very sterile. I mean, it was very deluxe. There's no doubt about it. The place rocks.
But I tell you what, I mean, without a compass, I'd probably still be there now. They'd find me in, like, one of the catering rooms cowering in the corner.
Well, we're going back next month, NAB, National Association of Broadcasters.
Which will be at a nice, sensible convention center.
It's going to be at the Las Vegas Convention Center, same as CES.
Yeah, and the monorail is the way to win that one. Any brutal show there, the monorail to the convention center, that's a winner. We proved that in CES.
Stay at the MGM and take it right in.
Yeah, or either, you know, the trick is, and here you go, folks. You get it only here on Inside Mac Radio. Stay at one of the ends of the monorail line. Don't stay anywhere in the middle because the trains fill up at the ends and don't stop till they get there.
Or if you're like me and you don't like public transportation, just stay at the Four Seasons and take a town car in.
Wow.
Whoa, dead silence after that. Oh, my goodness.
Well, maybe we'll fit in the trunk or something with that one.
I don't see how much better the Four Seasons is. I mean, it's inside of Mandalay Bay.
Right. You know what?
It's got its own separate. It's a totally different hotel inside.
It's sort of connected, like, on the side of it or something.
Yeah.
It has its own porch chair and everything.
So it's got to be twice as much as Mandalay Bay.
At least.
They had another weird little boutique hotel there, like, off the one end. You could get to there from the casino.
It's called The Hotel.
Yeah, what's the big deal?
Remind me of the W.
It's a new one. I think they're trying to make it Ian Schrager-esque, very modern and stark.
You mean like
and
the Paramount?
I'm not really big on the minimalist.
You know, like the Paramount in Manhattan, right? Another Schrager hotel, right?
Yeah, very much so.
The place is, they booked me in the Paramount one time. I could reach out my arms. I touched both walls of my room. I put my key in the door. I broke the window.
That's New York hotels in general, though. I mean, man, there's not a lot of space there.
Yeah, it was very she-she. And it was very pretty. It was just very tiny, and I felt a little had.
Okay.
But it was very artsy. Anyway.
They got you. They got you. They got you again.
When we return, I'll be speaking with Glenn Stevens, Pixel Post Studios. Find out how you can make really professional-looking television graphics with tools for television and Photoshop. It's Inside Mac Radio.
We'll be right back.
Golf Digest is going to cure your slice now, and that's a guarantee. Introducing the breakthrough video, Cure Your Slice Now, and it's free with your paid subscription to Golf Digest magazine. In this video, top PGA instructor Chuck Cook shows you the seven key phases of the swing and gives you his proven method for better control and longer, straighter drives. And here's our guarantee. If Golf Digest and Cure Your Slice Now doesn't cure your slice and improve your game, cancel the subscription and keep the video free. Every month in Golf Digest, you get easy-to-follow instruction from the best teachers and players in golf, information on the top equipment, the best places to play, and you also get the removable Pocket Tips booklet. Call now. Use your credit card and get your first risk-free issue, the Pocket Tips booklet, and the video free. You get 11 more issues for only $19.77. If your game doesn't improve, cancel your subscription and keep the video, booklet, and magazine free.
So call 800-228-6605. That's 800-228-6605 for Golf Digest.
Informal, informative,
in front of the industry.
Inside Mac is on. Call Scott now at 800-490-0058 or email us at radio@insidemac.com. Inside Mac.
Television, Photoshop, lower thirds. You want to know what all that means? Well, you're going to hear in one small moment. This part of the Inside Mac Show is brought to you by iPodRx, the definitive number one software to grab podcasts and cool syndicated feeds on your Macintosh. Check them out at iPodRx.com.
I'm Desmond Crisis. He's Scott Shepard. And joining us now on the phone is Glenn Stevens. Glenn is the president of Pixel Post Studios, and they're the guys who make tools for television. Hello, Glenn.
How you guys doing?
Hey, we're doing great. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about what Tools for Television is and how it works with Photoshop.
Tools for Television is a standalone application that when it's running, it kind of attaches itself to Photoshop and adds a new palette of features that aren't already in Photoshop, a lot of After Effects types of features, ability for alpha channels, safe grids. There's just a huge variety of different features and tools that video designers need that are very time-consuming to do, and Tools for Television gives them very quick access to it and just increases their workflow and helps them just to work a lot faster and more intelligently.
Let's talk for just a moment to the people who watch television instead of make television. What are some of those things that you're talking about? Lower thirds, grids, title safe area. What are some of these things, and how would people know when they're looking at it on their television?
Basically, when you're watching television, you have some sort of action going on in the background. Occasionally, you'll see someone's name come up at the bottom of the screen, possibly their title with some sort of background behind it. When there's an illustration, more information is needed, they'll put up a full screen image. Most people are using Photoshop to design those graphics, and there's a lot of technical things that need to be dealt with in order to get those on the air. For one thing, when you see a graphic on screen, when it looks like it goes edge to edge on your television set, in the graphics program that you created in, you're actually not going edge to edge. To enable that graphic to be cut over the top of video, you need something called an alpha channel to help see motion video behind the graphic that's sitting in front. And this tool is what allows you to design intelligently those aspects into your graphics when you're working in Photoshop.
So the alpha channel essentially is an invisible layer where video will be overlaid into the video when it's done.
Essentially, it's the cookie cutter for the graphic. And the switcher or editing device gives the graphic the ability to have one portion of it visible and the rest of it, which would maybe possibly be a black or white background, be completely knocked out and let video pass through that.
Without your Tools for Television, how were people doing this before?
Before, people were spending enormous amounts of time creating actions that, for the most part, worked fairly well but aren't necessarily intelligent to your document. And that's where Tools for Television kind of steps things up a notch. There are, in the newer versions of Photoshop CS, you do have the ability to have a grid overlay or an overlay that allows you to see your title safe area, It's not very obvious where it is. You have to be familiar with it in order to know which lines signify what. Tools for Television makes it very easy. It's a very common video safe grid that shows you what area you need to be designing in. Alpha channels were something that have been very difficult to create in the past, especially when you have things like drop shadows and non-raster elements to your images that are mathematically things happening going on in Photoshop. Tools for Television, when it creates those alpha channels, it's calculating all of those things in without the user having to render out layer styles, keeping them able to edit their images without basically messing up all the work that they've done and still giving them the ability to very quickly create these alpha channels.
Glenn, tell us about Title Builder. This is a rapid development for building titles. You have a bunch of templates. How does this all work within the application?
Title Builder is a very powerful and very cool tool. It takes a Excel type of spreadsheet. It's laid out like Excel where you have rows and columns. Each column corresponds to a text layer in Photoshop. Each row is going to correspond to a new graphic that's generated. And what Title Builder allows you to do is create a template in Photoshop where you have maybe different text layers, a background, and Title Builder will then take your text and move it real time into the different text layers in your images, create new alpha channels, do the non-square pixel resizing compensation for you automatically, and save out individual files, one for each of these rows within Title Builder. So you don't have to manually go into Photoshop, type all these different text layers in, do your non-square pixel conversion, save it out, create an alpha channel. Title Builder does this all extremely fast. And when you're dealing with 20, 30, 40, 50 graphics that are essentially all the same with just different data in them, this causes you to be able to generate them very, very, very quickly and then save these lists out and reuse them later.
Glenn Stevens is the president of Pixel Post Studios. Glenn, tell us, are any of these tools for your average user? Is there a way for somebody to get started with this thing if they don't do it for a living?
Absolutely. And we have another product called the Photoshop Toolbox, which is a CD just chock full of tutorials, explanations about all these terms I'm throwing around, alpha channels, safe grids, non-square pixel, square pixel. There's so many different technical aspects of this, and our other product teaches you what all of this means. If you don't have a video background and you want to get into it and start using Photoshop, this kind of gets you up and running, and then the Tools for Television Pro software will take what you've learned on the CD and then give you the tools to actually work intelligently in Photoshop. And I want to add, we've got a new version coming out right around NAB time. It's going to add all kinds of features for the broadcast folks, the ability to FTP real-time right into their still stores, the ability to save out your alpha channels as separate files instead of locking them to your graphics. We have the ability for you to grab video stills real-time into Photoshop from your FireWire devices.
Excellent. Glenn Stevens, thanks for joining us today. Glenn Stevens, president of Pixel Post Studios. Check them out at pixelpoststudios.com.
You're listening to Inside Mac. Next up, we're going to be talking about what is journalism and the Macintosh. We'll be right back. Do you want to find Macintosh software updates faster? Do you want to do this without paying a yearly fee or a site bogged down with tons of advertising? Do you want your software update site to offer you a free membership featuring custom watch lists, email update notifications, custom layouts, and more? Do you want to have the latest 15 Macintosh software updates streamed to your menu bar? Now, do you really want to know who this great website is for the best Macintosh software updates on the planet? It's MacUpdate.com. Check out MacUpdate. Visit www.macupdate.com.
Momentum for your Macintosh. Scott Shepard is Inside Mac.
You wish to leave a record of your call.
Welcome back to this edition of the Inside Mac radio program. This part of Inside Mac is brought to you by Mac Update. You want to get software for your Mac updates. You want to get in and out, get it done quick. Don't have to see 65,000 ads. Well, check it out, MacUpdate.com. Right now, I want to talk to somebody. I was talking with Ken about this earlier, and there's been this discussion here lately about this ruling with Apple and this being real legitimate sites. And I was sort of talking with Ken about this ruling the judge came up with about getting this information from these Mac sites that posted trade secrets. Ken had a concern that it was a journalistic type issue where because they were small, they got hammered. I kept telling him, if you look at the judge's ruling, it was because they posted illegal stolen property from the company, and it's more of a trade issue and not a journalistic issue.
Well, and wait, hold on. In fairness, my concern was not what I actually said was if they had done that, like let's say it was a Time or a CNN or somebody that had done that. I mean, there are two things to think about. First of all, they're going to have executive editors who probably aren't going to let them print something like that.
I don't know. Look at CBS. Dan Rather just left this week because of issues.
Let's start at the beginning, though. At the beginning, there was something.
No, because
that...
I want to say what I wanted to say first.
I thought you were done. Go ahead,
My
Ken.
Question was not whether or not, I mean, whether, I mean, if somebody else does this, are they automatically, what the guys on the websites are saying is that they don't have the money to keep fighting this. They don't have the institution behind them to keep fighting this. And this actually goes back to a point that I was heading towards last week as well. What is it that's going to, I mean, we were trying to figure out what is the thing that's going to make somebody legitimate. And I don't know that there is any one thing that's going to make someone legitimate right now. And so it does seem like the CNNs of the world or the MSNBCs or whoever of the world are better off because at least they've got more money and more people to throw at the situation.
You know, it's really interesting, too. There was another article, and I think this was from Rachel Conrad from Associated Press, wrote that, quoting that, these sites weren't actually considered journalists because they were not creating journalistic content. They were basically regurgitating and re-disassembling press releases and other data, adding little analysts or journalistic content to it.
That's incredibly different, too, than what we've seen, in the past 4 years coming out of the Washington bureaus.
Yeah.
I mean, forgive me. I mean, I'm not trying to hammer anyone in particular, but I mean, when was the last time that somebody actually did go, Laura, maybe you know, because it's the kind of thing that you keep up with. What was the last, like, big, hard-hitting journalistic, like, you know, investigative report thing?
How about the guy who had the, who outed a couple of agents? It was a national security secret.
Even that's not investigative reporting, though. Somebody called him and said, hey, drop a dime on this woman. And that, my friend, was actually, I mean, please.
So, Ken, answer your question, I mean, what they teach Journalism 101, the ideal thing that you're supposed to have when you're creating a story as a journalist is balance.
Right.
If you hear one person's side of the story, you need to go to the other side and interview them and include their point of view as well. What a lot of media outlets have not been doing, and this also spills over to people's blogs, and I know there's been a lot of talk. I just started getting the San Francisco Chronicle, and almost every day there's a blog story. People are becoming citizen journalists because they keep a blog. And I think that a portion of the population does have these noble civic intentions to disseminate information and to keep people informed so they can be better citizens. However, the one thing a lot of these things are missing is balance. And if this rumor site did not go to Apple and get some official comment, I mean, even if Apple was going to say, well, we can't comment on this or that's not true, I mean, as the reporter, you need to attempt to get both sides of the story and to spill the entire story out there and not give subjective information. And you know what, like you say, I mean, a lot of news outlets have not been doing this. Look at Fox News, look at, you know, you can name many, many people. But I think if the judge wants to decide that what was being posted on these sites is not journalism, that they need to apply those same set of criteria to other media outlets as well, regardless of how much money they
have. Well, actually, you know, it's interesting you say that, because the judge actually doesn't say that specifically.
Right.
His deal is that he's saying that the reporters published stolen property, and they were not entitled to the protections based off of California's Uniform Trade Secret Act. So it wasn't a journalistic issue.
That's what I'm saying. The question I was raising with you earlier was actually not a journalism versus are these guys real? Are they not legitimate? It's just that if they had more money, if they had more backing, I mean, let's say CNN screws up and does go ahead and do something like this, and I'm not knocking Apple. I mean, let's say it's Microsoft. Let's say it's IBM. Let's say it's Coca-Cola. Do they go after CNN with the same kind of fervor that they went after these three guys? Who, I'm sorry, these three guys, even though they didn't do any really investigative reporting, and yes, they actually printed something or, you know, posted something that was obtained nefariously.
I think
they got the biggest story ever for them. I mean, are they really going to walk away from that?
I think the answer might be that the people specifically involved would be under fire and may or may not either be let go or be forced to resign. But no, the entity as the media outlet would still be able to stay alive, and maybe that's the difference.
Maybe.
Media, it was always a controlled environment in the past. There used to be three television channels that you could get, and that was your intake of broadcast media and maybe a handful of radio stations. The tools are in the hands of many. Broadcasting is an endangered species. It will always be there, but it has to compete with all different kinds of outreach media. Apple may have picked a fight they knew they could win, because these guys have, and they've turned out to be right, do not have the resources to fight this. At the core of the argument is the fact that, yes, they were in possession of stolen information, and it really isn't a journalism deal. But had any of the biggies gone after it, would they have picked that same fight? And also, the other ironic thing at the whole core of this is it was an insignificant, useless little piece of information.
Right,
that started
it's a product that's $100 little something or other, and it's not life-changing. It wasn't like...
Now, don't say too much about it, Scott, because
I'm not saying anything about it, but let's just say, you know, it wasn't like a G6 or a supercomputer with 18 core
memory. Not that we know anything about those things.
Who knows? It was just some little goofy deal, and I don't see why these guys are going this far.
So it was a message out of Cupertino.
Sacrificial goat, guys.
Just to prove a point.
Sacrificial goat.
The deal is, don't post stolen information. That's the chief takeaway.
You're no fun.
We'll be right back.
Imagine what it feels like to be a hero every day. You can make a difference in the Coast Guard. Search and rescue, saving lives. You're answering the call. It's a job that matters.
Join the Coast Guard or Coast Guard Reserve. Save lives. Stop drugs. Protect the environment. Call toll-free 1-877-NOW-USCG. The Coast Guard. Jobs that matter.
Imagine what it feels like. You can do it all. Coast Guard. Jobs that matter.
Call toll-free 1-877-NOW-USCG. The Coast Guard. Jobs that matter.
Informative.
In front of the industry.
Inside Mac is on. Call Scott now at 800-490-0058 or email us at radio@insidemac.com. Inside Mac.
Do you wonder what goes on at these crazy geek events like Photoshop World? Well, you're going to learn here in one moment what really happens. This part of the Inside Mac show is brought to you by Macworld Magazine. Do you want to read all the cool goodies about the Mac? Updates, reviews, tutorials, it's there, macworld.com. So, Desmond, this week we attended the lovely convention in beautiful Las Vegas at the Mandalay Bay Convention and Exposition Center, Photoshop World 2005. What were your thoughts on it, brother?
You sounded like we were doing more of the production that we did. We did so many
photos.
We
did five shows.
I got to tell you, okay, first of all, Photoshop World is amazing, and there's going to be another one in Boston in the summertime.
Yep.
It's going to be a little bit of a trek, but if this is your business, if this is what you do, you really have to go to these things. I mean, we didn't get a chance to go to any of the tracks because we were just running around interviewing people. We've got gobs of content up on the website. All kinds of stuff. We interviewed a lot of people there.
Actually, we have six radio programs we did.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff up there. So you'll be able to catch an idea of what was going on. But the tracks were amazing, you know. The one I really wanted to go to and I couldn't go to was Kevin Ames doing the two-parter. How to photograph women and then how to work on those images to try to capture that thing. And other guys like Vincent Versace were there. Richard Harrington, we're going to speak to him shortly. A lot of these guys, Taz Talley. I mean, Burt Monroy had like a huge ballroom with three screens filled the whole time. It was insane.
We walked into his session. There was like 1,000 people in there.
Waiting just to hear what he has to say because he is one of the gurus of this stuff. Photoshop is an intense tool, and it's not really so much about what the tool is capable of. It's how you manage your work through it is one of the really important sessions that we were able to see. We also did some interviews live on they called it the Tech Expo Theater. It was a little theater off to the side of the exhibit center. And also in the exhibit hall, there was lots of good stuff. There were printable textiles. If you wanted to make a quilt with photos on it, there were textile designers there. Do you know what textile designers do? I used to work with one. If you have a pair of, like, say, Darth Maul boxer shorts from Star Wars,
right?
They're the people who line up the way that the size of the image on the fabric has to be so that it will repeat properly and that the seams won't goof it up.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, and I bet they do all this in Photoshop, probably.
Yeah, they do all of it. They're all pixel pushers. There were textile designers at this deal. So there was a lot of stuff there. And, you know, a lot of people are not necessarily creative types. There are also your analytical and your science professionals who use these tools. The guy sitting next to me at the keynote was a veterinary pathologist.
Yep.
I mean, he's the guy who looks at images and manipulates them in such a way that he can see details that you ordinarily would not see.
One of the guys, you know, they have these other, they have a couple little goofy events afterwards, but one of the cats that was in there was from the DEA.
Yeah, my camera, oh, they were joking around, they were having, this is Midnight Madness, which is basically just pure entertainment for everybody during the evening, and they said, the guy made kind of an, it's a real loose thing, he says, I'll give this duffel bag to somebody who can produce a crack pipe, and everyone starts laughing, and this guy walks up, and he shows him a wallet, and says, well, I don't have one, but I can get one, and it's a DEA agent in the audience. I'm like, wow, I didn't think this was Spot the Fed, but whoa.
Yeah, it's pretty, and like you said, the party, we went to the ESP Zone in New York, New York. Mm-hmm. They had a great deal, but you give, you know, free games.
Well, you know why you go to something like this is because, and this harkens back to old Vegas, where you would be able to rub shoulders with the celebrities in the hallways. That's why you go to a show like this, because you might get one-on-one FaceTime with a guy like Vincent Versace, and you could ask him a question, and, you know, and be able to actually interact with people that have these amazing skills that you're used to seeing. You can actually interact with these people who are pros.
Exactly, you know, and it's just, like I said, the way that thing is run, the organization, they're so on top of it compared to a lot of other conferences. It's such a, you know, things only, if you're a member, it's only like $300 to go to it.
Right, and here's another interesting thing. There were 3,000 people there this year, and I understand there was about twice as many as last year, so yep. This is growing fast.
Yeah, those guys are making tons of cash, man. It's all good.
Check out all our stuff on the website. InsideMacRadio.com. We got the keynote. We got a little bit of everything. Don't miss that keynote. It was a trip.
It is cool stuff. And next up here, we're going to be talking with Richard Harrington. He is the Director of Content, Program Director for the National Association of Broadcasters Convention coming up here in April.
The Computer History Museum in Mountain View, California is home to the world's largest collection of computer-related artifacts, including rare and one-of-a-kind objects such as the Apple I, the 20th anniversary Mac, and the Palm Pilot prototype. For tours and events or more information, please visit www.computerhistory.org or call 650-810-1010.
Macintosh for the new millennium.
This
is Inside Mac.
Inside Mac. Inside Mac.
Get on live now at 800-490-0058 or email us at radio@insidemac.com.
The National Association of Broadcasters, television, TV, radio, all kinds of great stuff. And we're going to be talking about the man. If you want to learn about post-production, well, we have the guru with us. And this part of Inside Mac is brought to you by Dr. Mac Direct. Is your Mac broken? Your grandmother's Mac is broken and you can't help her, but they can. Check them out at drmacdirect.com. Great things. They can log in your machine and fix you up real quick. Right now we're here with Richard Harrington. Richard is the Program Director for the National Association of Broadcasters Post-Production World Conference. How are we doing, Richard?
Good. How are you?
Good. So did you survive our little trip this week?
Yeah, Photoshop World was a blast, but Vegas is always a very tiring place at the end of the day.
Sounds a little hungover, doesn't he?
He does. He sounds just like we do. He's happy to be breathing.
But you're getting ready to ramp up for the next one, Richard.
Yep, back to Vegas for the sixth time in 5 months.
Wow, that's crazy. So tell us about, you know, NAB is the National Association of Broadcasters, huge monster convention. It's like 100-something thousand people show up for this deal. Tell us about the conferences. You're the program manager, program director for Post Production World. What is this all about?
Sure. The NAB Post Production World Conference is one of a few conferences that are running at NAB. Every year, people get together, broadcasters, video professionals, and they come to Vegas, and they've been having this convention for years, to meet and talk about news and take a look at the new equipment and everything that's coming out. And last year, we launched a conference just for post-production, both post, like the, you know, the editing, the finishing, as well as field production. So it covers both aspects. Last year, we had about a little over 1,200 people. And the conference runs for 6 days. Some people come in for just 2 days at a time or just 1 day. Some people come for all six. So it starts before the actual NAB conference. It starts on the Friday before and then runs through the Wednesday. So there's quite a bit going on.
What kind of stuff can we find at your conference, Richard? Is this just all DV, or are you going to get into a little more higher-end things than just your digital video slash home user type stuff? This probably isn't. Is any of this even actually relate to an actual consumer or a home user?
Well, consumer is such a strange word. I encounter consumers or people who don't consider themselves professionals who, you know, have $20,000 systems when you add up their camera and their gear and everything else. But this is designed really for those people who make their living doing media production. Now, that may mean that they're a web professional and they're coming because they're interested in some of the multimedia offerings like macromedia products like Flash and Director, but maybe they want to learn more about video editing. Or maybe they are a video editor who wants to learn more about that, but they also want to brush up on some of their field production skills. There's classes in audio production, both field work and post-production. There's classes in multimedia distribution for internet video, CD-ROM, DVD, and then all of the major, most popular software tools that are used to create content from manufacturers like Adobe, Discrete, Avid, and Apple all have extensive offerings basically on their entire video product line.
Do you find that your conference is really about giving broadcasting people access to better digital tools, or getting broadcast people to use these tools to reach out into alternative markets, online delivery, and things like that?
Well, it's not just broadcasting people. I mean, the NAB is officially a convention for broadcasters, but I would say that maybe around two-thirds of the people in attendance at the conference aren't into broadcasting per se. Maybe they create content that may be broadcast, or maybe they're in corporate video or event videography. There's a wide range. It's more than just that. It's just everybody has gotten together, and this is the largest show for video content creators. With that said, people are really diversifying. So we found that people are interested in more than one topic. So we may see this in that person who's traditionally been a field content creator going out being shooting and acquisition now is interested in learning how to edit their own equipment. Or edit their own content together, I should say. We find that people who are traditionally maybe video editors may have realized that in order to remain competitive, they want to learn about Photoshop and After Effects and motion graphics. So what we're really seeing is that both due to changes in the marketplace with having fewer people in the work environment, as well as just, you know, people's desire to be competitive, people are diversifying and trying to learn more skills so they can better serve their clients.
Yeah, and if you look at the rundown, it's amazing on what you have. I mean, you have stuff from, like you said, Final Cut Pro, but you get into some pretty heavy-duty application like Avid Nitro Systems, and you have Spanish and Japanese sessions.
Yeah, we've really put a lot of diversity in. I mean, there are a total of 12 rooms running. There's all sorts of different content going on at this actual conference. And what you've got is it starts off on Friday with what we call boot camps. So the idea behind boot camps is if there's a software package that you've always wanted to know, whether that's you're an experienced editor and you want to learn about Final Cut or Discrete Smoke or Flash, 3D applications like Lightwave, 3D Studio Max, you know, we've got these crash courses that are about 3 hours long that teach you the absolute essentials that you would need to know so you can get up and start working with these programs. And those are designed for people who aren't, I don't want to say newbies, you know, they've used computers, they've used tools before, they're just maybe new to this one package, or they want to know the latest for that version. Then it really jumps in hardcore. We figure at this point so many people have taken classes or have read books on so many of these topics, so we've really brought in top industry pros, you know, the top authors, people who are working on top shows, who are, you know, the number one trainers and authors in the country, and in the world in many cases. We have people coming in from around the world to speak, and they really go in depth on these topics. So it's not just beginner stuff. I mean, we have classes that, you know, are targeted for the newer user, but then we really also have some classes that are, you know, for the person with a lot of experience. We really feel like this is the conference that if you're an experienced user, you're going to get a lot out of it. And the great thing is that with every session, there's a very detailed description And it even includes a sentence describing who this class is for. So you could tell, you know, if this is at the right level for you. And if not, well, there's 10 or 11 other choices going on at the same time. So most people don't find it hard to figure out what to go to. You know, they have a harder time narrowing it down. So,
Richard, tell us about some of the personalities, the presenters that you have got to do these things.
Sure. We've got a whole range of folks. I mean, it's really quite impressive. You know, let's see, things that come to mind. On the After Effects side, Angie Taylor's coming in. She's a very well-known After Effects designer. We also have Jace Hansen, who's on the Creative Cal Forum. He's going to be teaching in the After Effects track. Joining me in Photoshop, we've got Glenn Stevens, who's a columnist for Photoshop User Magazine. As well, let's see who else is jumping out of mind. Some of the top trainers, like Jeff Greenberg over on the Avid side. Gary Adcock is going to be teaching in the Final Cut Pro track. He's well known out of Chicago. There's a lot of diversity. Douglas Spotted Eagle jumps to mind in particular. He's going to be teaching both on Sony Acid and the Vegas product line, as well as a bunch of video production classes. It's just really diverse, the number of talent we have coming in. You know, so many of these people have published books, they're forum hosts and online forums. You know, they're really experienced trainers. So there's full details with all the speakers up on the website that you can find. And like I said, I mean, it's covering everything. From Apple, we've got their entire product line of Final Cut Pro. We've got some Shake in there. We've got a lot of training for Motion, training for DVD Studio Pro, and even some of the sub-products like Soundtrack and LiveType. There's training on those and Logic. Then, you know, we've got the whole thing from Adobe with After Effects, Premiere, Photoshop, Encore, Audition. So if you are one of those users, you've got it covered. And on the Avid side, you've got the full Avid product line going all the way up to the top end with DS. We've put a big emphasis on high-definition video this year, both production, you know, the field work behind doing high def, as well as the actual editing and working with the different formats and different tools.
Richard, where can we get more information on NAB's conference? Is there a deal to sign up still? Is there any kind of early bird things left? Where can we get all this great info?
Sure. If you go to nabshow.com, that's a big website for all of NAB, and right on there you'll see a button that says conferences. So when you go to nabshow.com, there's a conferences button. And on that, right at the top of the list, is the NAB Post-Production World Conference. And it just says, click here for details. When you do that, it gives you access to a full grid. It talks about all the keynotes. For example, we've got this year, he was nominated for an Academy Award, the editor who did Finding Neverland and also cut Monster's Ball. He's going to be giving the opening keynote and talking about, you know, how he makes it as an editor out there. You can then, when you want to register, there's just a registration link. It's the second button down on the left. And there is a discount. If you pre-register, for example, the non-member rate to come to the entire conference, let me scroll down here so I'm on the right place. There we go. If you're not an NAB member, the entire 6 days of training comes in at $795. If you want to just come to the weekend, it's about $595. So really across the board, you're saving about $100 by pre-registration.
Great. I appreciate it, Richard. That was Richard Harrington. Richard is the person that's in charge of the Post-Production World Conference at NAB. You can check out their website at nabshow.com.
When we return, we asked for your email, and we got it. How should we say these domain names? We'll be right back.
Last year, we drove 400,000 miles, tasted over 1,300 food samples, vacuumed up 600 pounds of rice, flour, and dirt, washed 6,360 dishes, and we did all this just so you could get the top quality and value you deserve. We're Consumer Reports, the magazine that tests products to help you shop wisely. You have the purchasing power. Let us provide you with the facts. Call now and get 13 issues of Consumer Reports, including the annual auto issue. Plus, you'll receive the Buying Guide 2002 and the book How to Clean Practically Anything free with your paid subscription. A $70 value, all for just $26. Small change when you consider the long-term savings. Isn't it about time you got what you paid for? We think so. Subscribe now.
800-642-9900. 800-642-9900. Macintosh for the new millennium.
This
is Inside Mac.
Inside Mac. Inside Mac.
Get on live now at 800-490-0058
or email us
at radio@insidemac.com.
NAB, Flash Forward, Photoshop World. If it's happening, we're there. This is Inside Mac. This part of the Inside Mac show is brought to you by OSX FAQ, the leading place for Macintosh technical news and support for your Mac. Check it out, osxfaq.com.
We have asked for your email, ladies and gentlemen, as we always do. If you have any comments about the program, anything that you want to, stories that you, you'd like to hear covered on the show, and even if you want to tell us about what it is that you're doing, get us an email at radio@insidemac.com. The question we asked was,
do you have to say www in front of every URL you give out on the air? And I have to gloat a little bit here, because last week I said, you know what, people are smart, they can figure it out. If you type it in and it doesn't work, you can adjust.
Yeah, but I don't want people to do things twice, and sometimes they put websites on places that don't start out with www. But apparently,
but
I am in the minority here.
Our listeners have spoken, and they said, you're right, Laura. Well, they probably didn't say that specifically, but they said,
but
hey,
oh,
guys,
you wish they did.
Leave it off. And
actually, a bunch of them did say Laura specifically.
Aww,
oh,
thank
see,
you.
I told you to forward the stuff so that I can alter it before anybody sees it.
Ah, but no, they agree with Laura, and we should drop the www. So now it's just a matter of reprogramming the brain.
Scott's brain needs rewiring.
What I was saying to Scott is I was wondering if it might be kind of a generational thing, because obviously you guys were using computers before I was, so maybe some of the really early adopters were used to having to say www because, you know, people who are using ARPANET, you know, obviously the World Wide Web wasn't invented yet, and maybe it was just a habit from people who started using right around the time it started. But people like me, I came and just...
Well, there are still
everything.
People that we have to explain that the Internet actually has more than web pages on it. It's really funny. I don't know if he still does it. I'll look while we're talking here. But the very first site that I ever had an Internet account on, he keeps a web page running just to say, no, you can't buy this domain. No, there's no web server here. Go away. He's like, and he goes on this, like, at one point, he took it down, but he had a real big diatribe on, the Internet is not just web pages. There are other things working here.
But I think most of us assume now, and this is what, you know, we're learning, that yes, that's true, but more often than not, it is World Wide Web. Thank you, Tim Berners-Lee, by the way, the inventor of the World Wide Web.
Yeah.
I just knew that tidbit.
Not
I thought
British
I'd
Telecom.
Just throw that out there.
So here it is. It's at kludge.com, K-L-U-D-G-E. Don't bother. There's nothing there. He puts down nothing but one little phrase.
This page intentionally left blank.
I thought that was eloquent. It beats the rant that he had up there earlier. But there are things on the Internet besides the web, and I guess that was I was just being old school. Besides, we never really said www. We said www. And it just got a little silly. When it's the same word over and over again, you're right. And it was a little tough to listen.
InsideMacRadio.com. Send us email, radio@insidemac.com. What should our question be for this week? I want to know the PowerBook thing. If people want to see a model of either PowerBook or a tower that's really accessible to open up so you can tinker with and play with, or
absolutely.
Leave it alone. Leave it to the professionals.
And the laptop may not be the best example, but I always felt that the promise that Mac made from the very beginning was, we know what's in your computer, therefore we will make sure that nobody builds anything that's bad for your computer, and it will always work and it will never break. If you start putting your own stuff in the computer, you're going to be on your own just like every PC user. And that's not why you're here.
But the Macintosh was invented by people who loved playing with computers. I mean, look at Steve Wozniak and the Homebrew Computer Club. The whole reason
The Apple was. Not the Macintosh. Yeah. The Apple was.
That's
the Macintosh
true.
Is a different
story. Machine is so elegant as a new PowerBook. Everything's got to be super minimalist. It's got to be small and tight and compact. Very hard to work on.
You know what my home project is? I'm going to get this thing working. I'm going to bring it in here. I have a Franklin Ace 1000, which
cool.
is a clone of an Apple II.
By the way, really quickly, read a blurb this week that says Linus Torvalds runs Linux on an actual Macintosh box. So it technically can't be considered a Macintosh anymore, but he gutted it, and he put his own stuff in it. And I think that's cool.
Excellent. I want to see more of that kind of thing.
Good stuff. I think the guests of today's show, we had Lorraine Romero from Apple User Group Advisory Board, Linda Winan, Richard Harrington, Glenn from
Pixel Post Studios.
PixelPost.com. You're listening to the Wounded Edition of the Inside Mac Show. We'll be back next week.
Scott's going to get some sleep.